Later, the newspaper obtained 66 partially redacted pages of the report only after suing CENTCOM under the Freedom of Information Act. The probe detailed how biases led analysts to make tragically wrong assumptions. For instance, they concluded that a package loaded into the car contained explosives because of its careful handling and size, and that the driver's erratic route meant he was trying to evade surveillance. Meanwhile, Truthout noted in this regard, U.S. military officials knew that an August 2021 drone strike in Kabul likely killed Afghan civilians, including children, but lied about it. A report published recently revealed New York Times investigative reporter Azmat Khan analyzed a 66-page redacted U.S. Central Command report on the August 29, 2021 drone strike that killed 10 members of the Ahmadi family, including 7 children, outside their home in the Afghan capital. The strike took place during the chaotic final days of the U.S. ground war in Afghanistan, just 3 days after a bombing that killed at least 182 people, including 13 American troops, at Kabul's international airport. Zamari Ahmadi, a 43-year-old aid worker for California-based nonprofit Nutrition and Education International, was carrying water containers that were mistaken for explosives when his Toyota Corolla was bombed by a Lockheed Martin Hellfire missile fired from a General Atomics MQ-9 Reaper drone. As reports of civilian casualties began circulating hours after the strike, U.S. military officials claimed there were no indications that non-combatants were harmed in the attack, while stating that they would investigate whether a secondary explosion may have killed or wounded people nearby. U.S. military officials initially claimed the righteous strike had prevented an imminent new attack on the airport. However, they later admitted that the botched bombing was a horrible mistake. The military's investigation was completed less than 2 weeks after the strike. However, it was never released to the public. The Pentagon said it would not punish anyone for killing the Ahmadi family. However, as the Times details, portions of a U.S. Central Command investigation obtained by the New York Times show that military analysts reported within minutes of the strike that civilians may have been killed, and within 3 hours had assessed that at least 3 children were killed. The documents also provide detailed examples of how assumptions and biases led to the deadly blunder. Military analysts wrongly concluded, for example, that a package loaded into the car contained explosives because of its careful handling and size, and that the driver's erratic route was evidence that he was trying to evade surveillance. Furthermore, the investigation refers to an additional surveillance drone not under military control that was also tracking the vehicle but does not specify what it observed. The Times confirmed that the drone was operated by the CIA and observed children, possibly in the car, moments before impact, as CNN had reported. Hina Shamsi, an ACLU attorney representing families of the victims of the strike, told the Times that the investigation makes clear that U.S. military personnel saw what they wanted to see and not reality, which was an Afghan aid worker going about his daily life. When confirmation bias was so deadly in this case, you have to ask how many other people targeted by the U.S. military over the years were also unjustly killed, Shamsi added. Daphne Evitar, who heads Amnesty International's Security with Human Rights Program, called the new report more evidence than we need a huge change in how U.S. uses lethal force and assesses and reveals its consequences.
Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. We looked into the life of Muhammad Iqbal from his birthplace in Punjab province of British India, now in Pakistan, to his academic studies in the University of Cambridge. Iqbal was a very learned man who was known for his political ideologies and philosophical theories. He is fondly remembered as a great poet and scholar. The political content of Muhammad Iqbal's poetry is one of the most fascinating aspects of his work. Except for a few poems, his entire poetic endeavor is tinged with the political concerns of his time. Both domestic and international political events shaped his poetry. He not only responded to political events in his verse, but also inspired his fellow Indian Muslims through his poetry to find a way out of the political dilemma in which the British colonial rule had put them. Stay with us as we looked into how Iqbal helped his fellow Indian Muslims aspire to a better future and guided them on the road to freedom.
Iqbal's message is addressed only to the youth. He calls them Royal Falcons. As held by Iqbal, the Royal Falcon has five characteristics. Iqbal wants the youth to catch hold of Falcon's characteristics as much as possible. The five good attributes of the Royal Falcon, as seen by Iqbal, are flying high. So Iqbal wants the youth to fly high for sure. The second attribute is keen eyesight. The youth can fly high only if they have keen eyesight. Its third attribute is that it does not build a nest, nor does it follow richness. The fourth attribute, it loves solitude, as it is a source of creativity. The last attribute, as told by Iqbal of the Royal Falcon, is it does not eat the prey hunted by others. Iqbal wants the youth to show these five attributes.
Allama's poetry consists of certain periods.
His poetry was at first as the poetry of the day. He would say at that time, "My Urdu poems are like a building made of clay." Little by little, his Persian poems came into existence. Among the first Persian poems were the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. Such poems end with Javed Name, or perhaps with "What can be done, O Eastern people?"
Gradually, Iqbal changes from a national poet to the poet of the Islamic world. His versified story, "The Familiar Secrets and the Mysteries of Rapture," is first translated into English by Reynold Nicholson and published in the region. Years later, his Javedname is translated into German and Turkish in 1957 by those who study Islam, including Anna Marie Schimmel. The book is published in Munich, Hermann Hesse. The German writer and a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature writes an introduction to Javedname, as requested by the translator. Hesse writes, "Sir Muhammad Iqbal belongs to three intellectual domains. His works are the outcome of these three intellectual domains: Indian intellectual domain, spiritual domain, and Western thought's domain."
There are three groups of Persian poets. The first, those who are absolutely meaning-oriented.
Iqbal, as a poet, is highly accomplished. He has bridged the gap between wisdom and heart.
The second, those who are pedantic. Meaning is absent in their poems. They pay attention to words and nothing more.
His poems touch the reader's sensations because they are so meaningful and precede even the thoughts forming in their minds.
The third, those whose poems are full of both words and meanings. From among them, we can name Hafez and Saadi.
Such senses calm mind, imagination, and consequently heart. This is a rare attribute seen in such great poets as Hafez and Rumi. The attribute is common in all Iqbal's poems.
Allama Iqbal has mastery not only over words, but also over various meanings, meanings which come out of him and are derived from his thoughts. His meaning-oriented poems outnumber his other types of poems, just as Rumi's. Iqbal says, "There is no comparison between the melody and me. Speaking is only a pretext. I am pulling the camel, which has no rein."
Allama Iqbal, with a faith in Islam and a reasonable Gnostic faith indicating his deep certitude in God's sovereignty, moves his mind to search for secrets and mysteries of the creation. In his Islamic Gnostic poems and such verified stories as The Souvenir of Hijaz, The Eastern Message, The Familiar Secrets, and The Mysteries of Rapture, he talks about the principles of internal ontology of things and idealization of the existential world. While his thoughts are at the height of their powers, he invites Muslims to solidify familiar philosophy exactly in accordance to monotheism, to bring about a new perspective, a new worldview into the Islamic world.
So many memories are related to this house. My father came to live in this house when he was 11. Now, what sort of memory do you want me to tell you?
Talking about Iqbal's thoughts reminds us of the familiar thoughts as his central train of thought. We hear Iqbal saying, "To a mullah, a denier of God is an unbeliever. To me, more unbeliever is he who denies his own self."
Just ask, what is Iqbal's philosophy? The answer is, the philosophy of your own. Iqbal's philosophy is in fact the philosophy of one's own, or familiar philosophy. What is familiar philosophy? That you know your origin very well.
Never in my life have I been interested in the world's wealth or posts. I built this very house just to accept my wife's repeated requests. My wife's fate in this house had a different form. Here became a safe place for those in search of their identity. I clearly saw that most Muslims in the motherland had lost their Islamic identity, and to regain it, they need to struggle hard. The house, quiet corner, became a place for those who wish to fly faults of self-belief, something much needed by all.
The house originally belonged to my father, Javed Iqbal. The house title deed had already been issued to my grandmother. Upon the death of my grandmother, the deed was transferred to my father. Allama Iqbal would live here as my father's tenant. He paid the rent to my father every month or every 3 months.
Never did I lose my interest in my native lands, people, My best time was when I was among people to see them struggle hard to earn their living. I was inspired by their uproar in the Anarkli district. Loftier than the heavens is the station of man, and the beginning of education is respect for man.
Iqbal lays heavy emphasis on the familiar secrets and mysteries of rapture. Familiarity, as seen by Gnostics, means to entertain the self, to fully know the self. It's a famous statement that knowing the self is meant knowing God. Iqbal emphasized, first and foremost, returning to the self. Search within yourself in order to know the self.
Iqbal invites us to know ourselves before doing anything else. Anything else. We shall heighten ourselves to become a human being, Paul excellence.
From God's own being, the self got a being so. From God's own show, to self he gave a show. About this shining pearl, I know not where. It could be then without a river there.
Iqbal meant to look carefully at human beings on the one hand and to look carefully at Islamic ideology on the other hand. For that very reason, we see Iqbal describing in detail the Eastern society and the essence of Islamic thought.
Who is a selected man? A selected man is the one who is searched for by God. He is in a form desired by God. God wants that kind of human being. This is possible only if man searches for his self, to train himself in a desirable way, to maintain the self, to try hard to fully understand the self. This way finally leads to knowing well the Supreme Being.
The greatest message of Iqbal, as expressed in his poems, is to know yourself, to turn to your own self, to know the East, not the West.
Signs of going senile can be seen very easily in me. The tick-tock of the clock shows clearly the passage of my life. So quickly pass opportunities. So little time have I to reach the end of the line. Oh, the memory of those days when time's sword was allied with the strength of our hands and unveiled the face of truth. Our nails tore loose the knot of this world. Our bowing in prayer gave blessings to the earth. From the jar of truth we made rosy wine gush forth. We charged against the ancient taverns.
इस घर की तामीर हमारी दादी की ख्वाहिश पे की गई थी पर वो इस घर में
सिर्फ This house was built under my grandmother's wish.
उनकी यहां पे बीमार
But only for 2 or 3 days she lived here.
चौथे दिन वो फात पा गई. तो उसके बाद
She was sick when they carried her in a car. But she survived only for 2 or 3 days.
मेरे वालिद तब 11 साल के थे जब उनकी वालिदा फौत
At the age of 11 my father lost his mother. When my aunt was about 6 years old.
मूल बना लिया था कि वो दोनों बच्चे वालिद और
My father and my aunt would come here every day to see Allama who was lying on this bed.
दरवाजे में खड़े हो जाते थे.
Allama called them and my aunt would come up to Allama and my father would sit on the other side of the bed. This way Allama would feel comfortable.
लेट जाती थी अलामा साहब के इस तरह वालिद लेट जाते थे
मैं उनके चली जाती थी शाम के वक्त शाम होनी तो स्कूल से आके
I usually went to see them after school.
मैंने तो उनको इसी आदत
Allama was always lying on his bed and resting.
मैं पास जाके लेट जाती थी तो वहीं पे सारे मेहमान
I was always beside him.
हर वक्त लोगों
Other people would also go there.
मिलना मिलाना मुसलसली जारी रहता था
इस घर में कई लोग अलामा को मिलने आ चुके हैं कायदे आजम मोहम्मद अली जिन्ना
Many came here to see him. Among them, General Muhammad Ali Jinnah, Jawaharlal Nehru, Muhammad Ali Jauhar, and many other intimate friends of Allama.
अलामा साहब अपने बिस्तर पे बैठते थे और
They would come here just before or after midday to have a chat with Allama about topics like poetry, philosophy, or any other things. Allama spent his last days of life here.
I was well aware that the main reason why India went under the yoke of British colonization was lack of knowledge of self and reliance on others. Self-awareness springs out self-dependence and internal richness. Know yourself, know your hidden parts, nurture your parts, and create a new world, which will compensate for old shortcomings and soul defects to pave the way for comprehensive development. It is the self which originates existence. It is self-awareness which gives birth to human values. It is the self which affects existence. What human beings see or intuit is a manifestation of the self through mysteries. The form of existence is an effect of the self. Whatsoever thou seest is a secret of the self.
Iqbal's philosophy is objective and tangible. He pulls down philosophy from the metaphysical world to make it tangible and applicable to common people. Iqbal's philosophy is therefore a practical philosophy. It can be put into practice.
O Muslims, you have to preserve your own self. You must follow God and His book, the Holy Quran. When you achieve success in making your own self, you can resist even the whole world. No one can harm you. What is the basis of survival? Survival is based on making your own self. It is the self, the nature mentioned by Quran. And this is the essence of Iqbal's thoughts. This is what Iqbal means of the concept of self. For that very reason, every member of the Islamic world should know this way of thinking, personally and socially.
Today we see a group of ignorant people who commit, under the name of Islam, the most heinous acts, though they are all against Islamic teachings. In fact, they are all Satan's companions and toys in the hands of those who want to mislead them. About these people, Iqbal says, Europe very well knows how to secure interests. While granting to this, takes a loan of that. It gives sustenance to Satan in a way that leaves perplexed even God.
Nowadays, there are calculated plots against Islam. The enemy is very active to destroy the Islamic world from within. I personally think that we need Iqbal's ideas about Islam now more than ever before. You are simultaneously a learned man, a Sayyid, a descendant of the Prophet. But tell me, are you a Muslim too?
A Muslim is called infidel by another Muslim. It is not a non-Muslim who calls him infidel. It is a Muslim. All problems are created and spread here and there by those who are pursuing only their own interests.
The phrase which brings unity to you all is, there is no God but Allah. As Iqbal says, the key to our unity, salvation, and survival, and a sign of familiarity, is in this phrase, there is no God but Allah. Those who follow this phrase never behead Muslims. Iqbal's basic philosophy is that all of us should be unified. All of us should form one single family. Muslims should get unified to guard the sanctuary. I mean Muslims from the Nile shores to the city of Kashgar.
Iqbal tells us to put aside personal interests and to move into a direction leading to social interests. Put aside your personal interests. Let's talk about our religion, our unity. We will end in success. Just because of his thoughts, Iqbal is living on today. I think so.
Just have a look at the tragic events caused by a group of people who are Muslims in name only, as if there has never been a person like Iqbal. His philosophy has sunk into oblivion, as if Iqbal never lived among us. This is a great sorrow, casting a shadow over all Iqbal's philosophy and thoughts. There is no memory of him anymore. The light of all his great books has gone out. The everlasting letter, the familiar secrets of rapture, the Persian Psalms, what can be done, O people of the East? The rout of philosophy in Iran, the Eastern message, and reconstructing Islamic religious thoughts. During his last days, Allama says, "As Iran, full of unknown meaning, I am unable to endure censurers' sayings. Neither have I any option, nor am I coerced. I am but a living soil, always in revolution."
इसी तरह जब आखिरी रात थी अलामा साहब की, तो वो दोनों बच्चे इसी दरवाजे पे आए.
Then came the last night of Allama's life. His two children came to have their last look at him. Allama was still conscious. Someone from Germany had come to see him, a friend of his or his teacher. The German called the two children and hugged them. My father was leaving the room, but my aunt wasn't. She wanted to stay with him for a while.
At the time, I felt I had to stay with Allama and to sit there motionlessly. Our tutor, Aunt Doris, came there to take me with her. I told her, "I will stay here at least for a while."
Allama told the tutor,
"She knows that this is the last meeting between the father and the daughter. That is why she doesn't want to leave. Let her stay. Inko rehne de."
She knows this is the last time she sees her father.
And finally, I felt something was going to happen. For that very reason, I didn't want to leave the place.
Early in the morning, Allama passed away. The muezzin was calling out the morning adhan. Here, beside this bed, was standing his close friend, Ali Bakhsh. There were some other friends too, although most of them were saying their morning prayers at the mosque at that time. Back then, the mosque was more like a house than anything else. Friends were there to say their prayers in congregation. After their prayers, Allama passed away. His last words were the two testimonies. Then his soul flew to the sky. I personally suppose people like Allama will come to this world several centuries later.
Allama Iqbal Lahori died at the age of 61 on April 21st, 1938, after a life of diligence and hard work. In the last moments of his life, he put his hand on his chest, telling Ali Bakhsh, his man, "I have a pain here." And upon uttering this ambiguous, meaningful remark, he bade farewell to the world. Many attended his funeral and accompanied him to his final resting place next to Masjid-e-Shah in Lahore. On his deathbed, Allama composed this song. Does a song gone come back again? No. Does a breeze come from Hijaz? No. There finally came to an end all those days of poverty. Does a Gnostic come back a second time? No. Allama's thoughts and philosophy will remain with us forever, only if we follow him.
Iqbal was a significant voice in the traumatic history of colonized India. His sensitivity to the plight of his people was sharpened both by his understanding of his roots and his adaptability to the demands of the new colonized world. Politics and philosophy were combined in Iqbal's poetry. Perhaps today, Iqbal's anti-colonial stance can be referred to as neo-colonialism is still plaguing the world. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
A new survey shows that half of the people in Canada are very angry about what they view as the country's mismanagement. In another survey, nearly 60% of Canadians said higher borrowing costs will take a toll. According to this poll, younger Canadians are more likely to feel financial squeeze. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted in this regard, over two-thirds of Canadians, 67%, believe their country is broken, according to poll results published recently by the National Post and Ledger. Respondents across the political spectrum see a large divide between the issues they deal with in their daily lives and the issues their government chooses to focus on. Respondents were asked whether they agreed with Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre's claim that it feels like everything is broken in this country right now, though Poilievre's name was not mentioned. Just 25% disagreed with the statement, with the remainder undecided. Half of respondents reported feeling angry with the way Canada was being managed, with 2 out of 5 of those being very, very angry. Women were slightly more likely to be angry than men, and inhabitants of the Midwestern provinces, including Alberta, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, were more upset than those on their coast. More than two-thirds, 68% of respondents named rising costs and inflation and interest rates as the primary issue affecting Canadians, with the state of healthcare also commanding 59% of the vote. Affording a place to live came third, named by 43% of respondents, and jobs and the economy rounded out the top four with 40%. This contrasts with where Canadians believe the federal government is focusing its energies. Just 28% see Ottawa concentrating, like them, on rising costs and inflation, while 27% said environment and climate change was the government's primary focus. Another 25% said the government was chiefly concerned with Canada's response to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, while only 14% of poll respondents listed the crisis as a significant issue affecting their own lives. Fully 22% of respondents confessed they had no idea what the federal government was prioritizing. Local government was seen as slightly more in touch, with 37% of polled respondents reporting their provincial leaders were most focused on healthcare, 28% on rising costs and inflation, and 27% on jobs and the economy. However, 17% of respondents said they did not know what their local government was prioritizing. Conducted late last month, the poll surveyed 1,555 Canadians randomly recruited from an online panel. Canadians are far from alone in their economic malaise. Recent polls show two-thirds of Americans believe their country is on the wrong track and the economy is widely considered to be the primary challenge facing the U.S. Meanwhile, Bloomberg reported a majority of Canadians say they will be squeezed if the Bank of Canada holds borrowing costs at the current 15-year high, pointing to an impending slowdown in consumption. Some 59% of Canadians expect to be negatively impacted if the central bank keeps its benchmark interest rate at about 4.5% this year, according to Nanos Research Group survey conducted for Bloomberg News. Another 14% see a positive effect, while 1 in 5 say there will be no impact. The data support the belief among policymakers that a pullback in consumer spending will drag economic growth to a crawl as heavily indebted households contend with higher mortgage and loan costs. Most analysts expect Canada to enter a technical recession at some point this year as interest payments crimp expenditures. Watch out for Canadians tightening their grip on the spending wallet for 2023, Nick Nanos, founder of the firm, said by email, adding, "Even a holding pattern for the current rate will have some sort of negative impact on their personal finances." Inflation, however, is still a greater concern than higher interest rates. Nearly 85% of respondents said they are more worried about the elevated cost of everyday goods like food and gas than borrowing costs. Little change from the middle of last year when annual price gains peaked at 8.1%. Younger consumers were more likely to feel pinched, with 67% of respondents aged 18 to 34 saying higher rates had a negative or somewhat negative effect. For those 55 and older, it's only 48%. According to Bloomberg, the Bank of Canada indicated last month it plans to hold borrowing costs and assess the lagged impact of one of the most aggressive increases to interest rates in its history. Policymakers say the pause is conditional on the economy and inflation evolving broadly in line with their forecasts and warned of more hikes should the data surprise to the upside. In a separate survey, Statistics Canada said recently that 1 in 4 Canadians polled between October 21st and December 4th say they would be unable to cover an unexpected expense of $500 Canadian, that is $374 US, with more than a third reporting it was difficult for their households to meet financial needs over the last year.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamu alayha. Today, there are thousands of people across the country who are engaged in the work of reciting elegies and are mastering various techniques for attracting their audiences. This is a great phenomenon that is taking place in the country and we need to take advantage of it. Who should use this opportunity? I'm not saying that it should be used by me, government officials, or by this person or that person. I'm saying it should be used by the country, by the system, and by the revolution. The revolution must make use of this opportunity. This revolution needs to progress. It needs to make changes on a daily basis. You can play a role in this. That is what I am trying to say. You need to spread awareness in the country about the fight against tyrants, oppressors, the arrogant powers, and corruption. The problem with what we are doing in most places is that we direct people, we give advice, and we provide reasons and rationalize, but these things are not effective. Why? Because the public atmosphere is not in accordance with what we had intended. I have on numerous occasions insisted on the work that needs to be done in building culture. What you can do is to focus on culture building.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes we may need the country to stand up to the enemy or retaliate. At other times, the country needs to pursue knowledge and science, and sometimes it may be necessary to create an environment for thinking and reflection. We need to prepare the environment for these. I've already talked about the subject of family and raising children. You can play a far greater role than the Ministry of Health and the like in this field. You can give people encouragement, insight, and hope. As you can see, one of the enemy's most important tactics today is to create despair. Where? At the core of the country's existence. That is, in the youth. It uses all kinds of methods and tricks to create despair in their minds. What you can do is to do the exact opposite. You can give hope. You can work on guiding thoughts and actions, but there is a condition. If you wish to have the honor of doing these things, the first and foremost condition is that you be concerned about guiding people. An elegist should be concerned with guiding his audience rather than earning money, fame, social status, and such things.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost, you guided me from all
choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, black people have the highest rates of infant mortality and maternal mortality across all racial and ethnic groups for which data were available, and experienced the largest increase in maternal mortality when compared to pre-pandemic levels. The underlying inequalities in health and healthcare for black people also contributed to disparities in COVID-19, with black people facing a higher risk of hospitalization and death due to COVID-19 compared with white people. Moreover, the unequal effects of COVID-19 may lead to widening disparities in health going forward. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote in this regard, a black infant is many times more likely to die within 1 year of birth than a white infant is, even if that black infant comes from a wealthy home, a new study shows. The study, which was published by the National Bureau of Economic Research last month, demonstrates that disparities in black and white infant mortality rates cannot be explained by economics alone. Rather, racism within the healthcare industry, both overt and institutional, appears to play a significant role in such outcomes. The study conducted in California from 2007 to 2016 examined mortality rates for infants within their first year of life. It is being heralded as the first of its kind to measure disparities in infant mortality rates between black and white families in conjunction with tax data. The U.S. overall infant mortality rate is devastatingly high compared to other wealthy countries, and outcomes for black families in the U.S. are far worse than to white families, the study shows. Among the children who were born to the wealthiest white parents in the study, 173 died within their first year for every 100,000 births. Among white parents with low incomes, 350 infants died for every 100,000 births. Babies born to white parents with low incomes still had higher survival rates than babies born to the wealthiest of black parents, who experienced 437 infant deaths for every 100,000 births, according to the study. Outcomes were even worse for black parents with low incomes, with an infant mortality rate of 653 infants for every 100,000 births. The data suggests that the well-documented black-white gap in infant and maternal health that's been discussed a lot in recent years is not just explained by differences in economic circumstances. It suggests it's much more structural. Maya Rosin Slater, an author of the study and an economist who specializes in health policy at Stanford, said to New York Times, "It's not race, it's racism." University of Wisconsin-Madison public health economist Tiffany L. Green, who was not involved in the study, said of its results, adding, "The data are quite clear that this isn't about biology. This is about the environments where we live in, where we work, where we play, where we sleep." Notably, the U.S. is the only wealthy country without universal health care and is one of the only countries in the world without guaranteed paid family leave. As the Times reported, there are many documented examples proving that racism exists in the U.S. healthcare system. While the country's infant mortality rate is gradually decreasing each year, disparities between black and white patients remain. There are also disparities in the treatment of black and white people who give birth. In an op-ed for Truth Out in 2018, parenting and health author Rochuan Meadows Fernandez detailed her experiences with racism in U.S. healthcare system after giving birth to her son. Though she had passed several blood clots and felt extreme pain whenever she tried to walk, physicians repeatedly told Meadows Fernandez that what she was experiencing was normal, with some telling her after tests following her pregnancy that everything looked fine. After a month of inaction by her doctors, a physician finally listened to her complaints, eventually discovering that a piece of placenta was still inside her uterus. Meadows Fernandez wrote, "All of a sudden, the medical establishment acknowledged the dangers of the situation I was facing, increased risk for hemorrhaging, infection, and even death. Even then, physicians continued to ignore other health conditions she was suffering from, dismissing them as regular symptoms after childbirth. Her treatment was largely the result of systematic racism," Meadows Fernandez said. "The lack of cultural competence is so vast within the U.S. medical system that there are still professionals who believe black people have higher pain tolerance than people of other races," Meadows Fernandez said, adding, "It is also likely that, like me, other black women have also sought assistance only to be turned away due to false perceptions of black women's fertility or left uncomfortable after being subjected to embarrassment via interrogation. My experiences have shown me just a couple of the many ways in which the reproductive health system ostracizes black women," she added, saying, "It is especially important that black women have access to quality reproductive care because all too often our very lives are at stake." Also, according to the website of Kaiser Family Foundation, KFF, while black people have made great contributions and achievements in the United States, they continue to face many health and healthcare disparities that adversely impact their overall health and well-being. These disparities have been exacerbated by the uneven impacts of the COVID pandemic, ongoing racism and discrimination, and police violence against and killings of black people. Moreover, the long history of inequitable health outcomes among black people reflects the abuses faced during slavery, segregation, mass incarceration, and their persistent legacies. black people face increased barriers to accessing and utilizing health care. Black people are more likely to report financial barriers to receiving health care. While the implementation of the Affordable Care Act and pandemic-era policies have helped narrow some disparities in health coverage, non-elderly black people, 11%, continue to have a higher uninsured rate than their white peers, 7%. Further, compared to white people, black people are more likely to face social and economic challenges that adversely impact health, including higher rates of poverty and food insecurity. Black adults are also more likely than white adults and to report being treated unfairly because of their race, ethnicity, while seeking care for themselves or family members.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Thursday, Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah warned the United States and its allies that its attempts to stir chaos in the country will not be fruitful.
I'll tell the U.S., if you create chaos in Lebanon, then you will witness chaos in the entire region. If you target our people with your conspiracies, then we will use our power and arms to make you feel pain, even if this means war against your beloved Israel.
The leader of the resistance group also said that the 2019 protests in Lebanon were merely part of a U.S. ploy, which took advantage of weaknesses in the country as part of a new strategy after the failure of direct military invasions.
Lebanon has, from the year 2019, been the target of a new U.S. plot. First, it's a plot to eradicate the achievements and the victories of the resistance and its martyrs. And second, it's a plot to take Lebanon back to being under the hegemony of the U.S., which wants to impose its conditions on the country's domestic affairs and its conditions on relations with the enemy.
Nasrallah, who addressed people during the memorial ceremony of three of Hezbollah's martyred leaders, also emphasized that supporters of the resistance group who are suffering from economic crisis will continue to support the group. Observers believe that all stalemates in Lebanon, whether the inability to elect a president or lack of economic reforms, are all the result of a wave of subtle interference by the U.S.
The U.S. is pressurizing Lebanon economically to impose its conditions and bring to power a president who is loyal to Washington and is not friendly with the resistance, so that it can implement its policies by means of soft power. Having said that, it would not seem that the U.S. has launched a war on Lebanon or the resistance. While it would seem this is an internal Lebanese affair, this is where the threat lies in their plots.
Nasrallah also touched upon the issue of offshore oil and gas exploration, saying Hezbollah will hinder Israel's production of gas from oil fields should procrastination by the companies who have contracts with Lebanon continue.
After assassination of any prominent leader of Hezbollah, the resistance would go through